Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
You've made a serious investment in protecting yourself and your family. You've purchased the gun, the ammunition, the training, and even secured a license to carry in your state. You know the Constitution and don't believe you should have to pay for a right that you already have as written in the Second Amendment, but you are law-abiding. Now you are considering the legal defense options you should have if you ever have to use a firearm. Self-Defense Fund is a comprehensive litigation membership backing you on appeals, legal expenses, court costs, and more. Up to $1 million per incident and unlimited attorney costs per member. Discover selfdefensefund.com for yourself. Any weapon, any state, any time.
Herbs have been used by people since the dawn of time. When Rockefeller introduced allopathic medicine, many herbal remedies fell by the wayside as people put their faith in prescription pills and the world just gets sicker. Here at Heathen Herbs, we look to the past and to nature for answers. We offer tinctures, magnesium skin cream, lip balm, tooth powder, colloidal silver throat spray, and more. Check us out at heathenherbs.com.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Listen to Resolution Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Heroism by Thomas Cole. Presented by Kevin Alfred Strom. On this day, 11 September 2021, America remembers the firefighters, policemen, and first responders who died at Ground Zero 20 years ago. We remember them as heroes. No doubt, many remarkable and selfless deeds were done on this day, worthy of praise and remembrance. But there is a difference between a heroic selfless deed and a heroic soul, a heroic mindset, and a heroic life on the world historical stage. In our present and very strange time, the use of the word hero is as inflated as our currency, and as perverted as the self-righteousness of our politically correct anti-white ruling class. The downfall of the term hero really started to take off a few years after the World Trade Center collapse. And I also think it was deliberately set into motion by our Jewish political elite. Now, purple-haired mutants who come out as perverts are deemed heroes. Shriveled souls who search decades-old letters and speeches for words that are now forbidden to ruin careers and lives are heroes. Leering bureaucrats and drug pushers who cynically use a disease as a way to advance their careers or increase their power and wealth are, quote-unquote, heroes. By inflating something, even the meaning of a word, one reduces its value. The Jew understands this like no other. The Jew wanted us to kill primitive brown people who were getting uppity in Israel's neighborhood. So for a while we had heroes who bombed and killed them with abandon, even though they had exactly zero to do with 9/11. But to Jews, brown people are needed as a weapon against us. So bringing them here after slaughtering their kin in their homes was part of the plan, a process that still continues. Let's look at the most recent inflation of the word hero. Facing the deadly threat of a mild flu, every hero needs a worthy challenge or enemy. A new class of heroes is celebrated on yard signs throughout the country. Thank you, essential workers. Has kind of a Chi-Com ring to it. Essential workers, what a glorious name. Nurses, cashiers, salesmen, and the kid that mowed my neighbor's lawn last summer are lauded as saviors of mankind. Whenever I go grocery shopping, I salute the double-masked, obese female of color that hides behind a half inch of acrylic sheet. Thank you for your service, ma'am. No, actually I don't. I get out of there as soon as possible and get back to building a new world for my people and my children, a world in which she will have no part. To sum up the obvious, the state of heroism, especially white heroism, has massively declined. We went from the Minutemen, from Lexington and Concord, from men fighting for their people's future, to dreadlocked, race-mixing freaks throwing urine bombs and fighting against their own people, or to submissive slaves bowing to the latest insane edicts of their self-appointed traitorous masters. And that's tragic and dangerous. People need heroes, real ones, not just to slay monsters or solve problems, but to guide them as role models. A hero is more than just a remarkable human being. He represents a call to greatness. He opens a metaphysical perspective that transforms our existence into something higher. He shows us something essential that we didn't even know was essential before. We need a hero to become heroes ourselves. And we need to become heroes to save ourselves. Becoming a hero is now an existential necessity for every mentally and spiritually healthy white person who wants to take part in the future. Let's talk about a real hero. Our hero, Dr. William Luther Pierce, the founder of the National Alliance. Born on this day in 1933 and still remembered by thousands of men and women he inspired. Talking about true heroes and heroism, one has to define what the term really means. I think Julius Evola got it right in his essay, The Aryan Doctrine of Combat and Victory. The hero realizes that there is a metaphysical level of existence, a higher meaning. He finds himself embedded in a cosmic struggle between the forces of life and death, the never-ending holy war of existence. And he has come to the conclusion that he has to take sides in this cosmic struggle. He has heard the call and answered it. The holy war itself has two aspects. It takes place within the world, under the influence of various historical circumstances. With two factions fighting, one is always representing the forces of darkness and disintegration, while the other represents life and light. Evola refers to the war on the material plane as the small or minor war. The greater war is of a spiritual nature. It takes place within the hero himself. Here he has to fight his inner demons, tropisms really, which tend to corrupt and pervert him, that seek to force or lure him onto the path of self-degradation and self-destruction. The internal struggle is of greater relevance than the external one, because the eventual outcome of the war is decided there. The hero might fall in battle, but still be victorious, overcoming the forces of death within, while on the other hand, the villain may temporarily prevail on the material plane, but may ultimately lose the greater war, since he has internally surrendered himself to the forces of death. The precondition to survival and victory is laid in the souls of men. William Luther Pierce was a hero, much greater than the mere facts of his life might imply. He heard the call to arms and followed it without hesitation. His biography by Robert Griffin is a testimony to his supremely radical devotion to the survival and well-being of his people. Pierce, a physicist, worked as a college professor and then as a researcher in private industry. He had a wife and children, and he was well paid for doing what he loved, a blessing only few of us are granted, and he enjoyed good health and lucid intelligence. He had everything one could reasonably dream of, and taking his great mind, talent, and discipline into account, there really were almost no limits to what he could have achieved within society's framework of conventional success. And yet, he sacrificed it all without a moment's hesitation, when destiny called upon him to take up the fight against the enemy. And what an enemy he faced! Cunning, deceiving, rich and powerful beyond all others, and endlessly scheming to weaken and destroy our race, while at the same time exploiting its genius and stealing its wealth. The international Jew. He took on an enemy that smaller men would claim we could never hope to defeat. But his lifelong resistance to the Jew that bought him the hatred of the system and the admiration of millions of racially conscious whites across the globe was only the small war. In his quest to save his race, he willingly suffered countless hardships and heartbreaks, poverty, uncertainty, and many, many defeats and setbacks. By his enemies, he was and is depicted as an outcast, pariah, and monster. Yet his heroic spirit kept him going, kept him fighting against all odds, until all too soon, his body eventually succumbed to the unbearable pressure. But again, this was only the small war he fought. The greater war took place in his soul, in his mind, invisible and quiet. I'm talking about those dark hours many of us know and dread, when our demons, our doubts and fears, suddenly emerge from the abyss of our souls and start shaking the foundation of our convictions. The greater one's mind and the deeper one's commitment to the truth, the stronger the doubts that have to be faced. Is it worth sacrificing my life, my talent, my ambition to this cause? Am I even right? Or are my enemies correct when they call me a monster? I can't possibly win. Why not give up and enjoy whatever life has to offer? Most men give in at some point or other. We pacify the demons by compromising, walking on the path of gradual destruction, or submitting ourselves to the seductive lies society keeps whispering in our ears, putting on the light yokes our smiling masters hold ready. We compromise on our convictions, our beliefs, and by compromising, we murder the truth. Not completely, of course, and not all at once. The death of the coward is slow, and he thinks it will be painless. We give in just a little bit at a time, and then maybe a little more. Another small compromise to earn a necessary convenience. Shut your mouth and keep the job. Keep the pension. Close your eyes to the sickness that has befallen your people. Pretend not to hear the cries of anguish and suffering that would, very inconveniently, call you to take a stand and pick a side. You become mute, blind, and deaf. But you can still think what you want. Or can you? And so do many of us succumb to our inner foe until we eventually disappear in the soulless and dying mass that is the rotting flesh of our so-called civilization. Not so, William Luther Pierce. Heroically, he faced his inner demons and overcame them. He stood strong and toiled relentlessly for the truth, teaching, writing, publishing, organizing, speaking, inspiring, gathering his people, and building the National Alliance, the organization that will serve as the keystone for a new golden age for our race. Dr. William Pierce is more than his deeds and his teachings. His life itself the life of an accomplished yet seemingly mainstream white American who became a hero, serves as an example for us. We too can cultivate the heroic mindset that he embodied. Let us on this day, 11 September 2021, remember and celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. William Luther Pierce, who would have celebrated his 88th birthday today, by committing ourselves to the cause of the National Alliance, building his dream of a new consciousness, a new order, a new people, into a reality for all the ages to come.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people, 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey purified water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size for incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency. Get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National socialism fundamentally is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine, a place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a sudden dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again, when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say, if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kinds of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process, something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of women who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions and in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with a conservative, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every national socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just at dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they said, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics, the TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this, National Socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war, earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth. And compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker. Nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. They're no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life, just like here, could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. Patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now let me, I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, antisocial doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing the music and verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. Young fanatics that they made out of it, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got into Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a ball. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces. They just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. And the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed. And the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business. And the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change that. It won't be quite so liberal. After we've had a chance to make America understand what it is and make it conscious of itself and its greatness and its people, and the white race understand that they're worthy of protecting themselves, that they don't have to keep humbling and downgrading themselves while other races are standing up and saying, look at us, how great we are. We keep saying we're ashamed of ourselves for being white. That's a terrible thing. The thing for each race to do is be proud of itself. And the white people, the good people of this country, when they finally realize that they can do that without hurting or being obnoxious to anybody else, they will finally become fanatics to survive, to keep this great country going.